With all the controversy surrounding this year's Notes on Camp Met Gala, there's a lot of confusion to as why a drag queen like RuPaul didn't show up in drag, and why pop star Katy Perry, dressed up as a sparkly hamburger, wasn't camp at all.
Today, we take a look at what camp is and isn't with beauty blogger James Mansfield from RuPaul's Drag Race. James Mansfield was the first queen to be eliminated from her season of Drag Race, but at least she got to meet Lady Gaga. And since then, James has become a YouTube sensation for her drag tutorials, where she transforms cheap wigs into glorious bouffants.
Listen as we take on camp by the balls. The things that take themselves so seriously, they become hilarious. Ridiculousness for the sake of being ridiculous, and awful taste with excellent execution.
Plus, why positioning beauty blogger James Charles as a sexual predator may be transphobic.
Overzealous fans of RuPaul's Drag Race get kicked out of the taping at the crowning.
And why it was so important for Game of Thrones to burn it all to the ground.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Hello?
Hi, may I speak to James Mansfield?
Hello?
I guess not.
I guess she's too busy to talk to the likes of us.
Well, how are you guys doing today?
Hi.
Took you a while to get there.
She had to up her dose of helium.
You know, that's a rare substance now. You can't do James Mansfield's voice anymore.
There's a shortage. There is a shortage. I should be frightened.
I had no idea they mine it. And do you know why it's so hard to mine?
Why is that?
Because it floats up into the atmosphere.
You're like catching a balloon.
Yeah.
Honey, did you check RuPaul going on Stephen Colbert's show as a form of PR for the Met Gala hubbaloo?
Is that what that was?
So the Met Gala every year is a charity benefit for an art museum. If you're a New Yorker, you can get in there for free. But it costs money to run an art museum, you know, that has
billions of dollars of art in it.
Yeah. So if you're from out of town, you have to pay. So brilliantly, actually, they turn it into sort of the red carpet event in terms of New York's fashion scene of the year, and invite all the celebrities to pay $35,000 as the entry ticket in order to go there and show off how awesome and amazing their fashion can be when you have unlimited money and access to great designers. So this year, the curator of the museum said, we want to do an exhibit that sort of explains the idea of camp because of the success of Drag Race, because of the success of camp. He says it feels like it's become invisible. It's become invisible again because
there's too much camp.
There's too much of it. Yeah. And so people, drag queens are now the mainstream, and camp requires this detached view to look and criticize the aristocracy, excess, things that take themselves too seriously. And so he invited all these celebrities to do it. And the general consensus of fans of drag was that the whole thing was a colossal failure.
Yeah, I saw that. Like, I guess like all the articles that were coming out was everyone talking about how everyone like misunderstood the assignment. I mean, it's weird because camp to me has always been sort of a rich people kind of thing. It's kind of a niche thing to do. Like, you have to have a certain level of status to really pull it off. It's always like nouveau riche, bad taste, you know, callbacks to things that are political and fashions and things like that.
I don't know if I agree with that, because when you look at the films of like John Waters and Divine, you know, those characters, those people, they were all broke ass motherfuckers. And that's definitely camp.
Oh, no. Think about the background John Waters came from. John Waters and Divine lived in the suburbs, so they had to learn good taste and what it was in order to properly make fun of it.
I never actually thought about that. There is a vantage point to being able to be detached from society, is that it requires a certain amount of privilege.
I mean, for the most part, yes, because like he's made that statement himself. It's like, you have to know the rules in order to make fun of it properly. And it is, he's also said, like, camp and bad taste, it is a rich person's sense of humor. Like, is there bad taste, you know, where poor people are? Like, no one cares.
Well, I think it's interesting having you on the show talking about this because you're a drag queen who's first eliminated on her season of RuPaul's Drag Race, yet you have one of the most successful YouTube channels of any of the queens from the show. And part of it is that you don't go after this sort of high-end fashion market. A lot of your stuff deals with very grassroots, very humble tasks as of transforming a wig, you know, a dollar store wig into something really beautiful.
A $3 wig. Which I was blown away.
Or you talk about wrestlers, or you talk about sort of the culture of camp from a vantage point of somebody who's not necessarily had access to that.
I mean, I thank you for the compliments, but honestly, like, I feel like my way of like categorizing and curating the camp that I follow is by celebrating it. And especially with the $3 wigs things, like, you're essentially taking something that is worthless and trying to make it look grandiose and fabulous. That's camp. You know, I always say, like, it's succeeding at failing. You know, you can't really fail at something that's entirely made out of fail.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, Shawn Mendes showing up to the Camp Met Gala in a traditional black suit is camp.
As much as RuPaul trying to dress up as a pink zebra.
Exactly.
Everybody was going, like, what is that? Even Stephen Colbert, like, right in front of RuPaul, was like, is that supposed to be a zebra? He's like, yes. Like, he was really offended about it. RuPaul's longtime designer, Zaldi, did the suit. And a lot of people were just kind of really mad that RuPaul didn't show up in drag. RuPaul's response was like, well, I was expecting a lot of people to show up in drag and nobody did.
Oh, really? That's what he said?
He didn't want to upstage them.
Everyone's definition is different. Like, you look at other cultures and camp, like, they don't follow the same kind of, you know, guidelines that American camp does.
But this is the thing, like, I want to push back on this idea of camp and gay sensibilities as something of privilege, because a lot of gay culture actually stems from the culture of the oppressed, of Polari and, you know, gypsies and sex workers and carny folks that were around during the times of Oscar Wilde, Victorian England. And what it was a very diverse group of people sort of developing a language and a sensibility in order to survive. And these people were sort of looking at the world around them and they said, this world takes itself way too seriously. There's a lot of money that, you know, awful taste with excellent execution. And the works of Charles Dickens, actually, Oscar Wilde said, you know, the death of Little Nell, this short story where this little girl dies, he said, you have to have a heart of stone not to laugh out loud at the ridiculous writing of this little girl dying, that it was so over the top that it just, you know, you were delighting in how seriously it took. And part of that was all these people that were sort of disenfranchised, that were being arrested for being gay or being arrested for being sex workers or carny folks or gypsies. They were thrown in jail. And this is a way for them to sort of rise above the oppression that they were facing by you know, developing a system, a way of looking at it. And that's why we have camp sensibility. That's why we have the word drag, the word tea, the word, you know, all these words that we use to describe the world came from this diverse group of people at this specific point in time. And so, you know, when you have this museum trying to do, I think actually the museum, from talking to people who've been to it, to the exhibition, they actually say it's really good and actually sort of really spells it out very distinctly. But all these wealthy people sort of, you know, Katy Perry in a burger suit actually to me seems campy in the sense that she's failing at being campy.
Mm. And which she's out of touch with what is, you know, she's out of touch. And that's campy in its own right. Because you look at like traditionally campy movies like A True Beverly Hills. And it's camp and the fact that she's so out of touch with what you're supposed to be, what's appropriate, you know, for this kind of setting, like, and, you know, exaggerating that.
Maybe she thought, yeah, you eat hamburgers at camp, so I'll dress as a hamburger and show up.
No, but did you see her, like, changing, trying to pee in the burger suit in the bathroom and then Jennifer Lopez comes in? That, to me, was the highlight of the whole thing.
But yeah, it's like you think about it, like mascots, a burger suit mascots are camp. Like she didn't necessarily fail. It's just she fails because she's just not very good at, you know, the assignment. And it's Katy Perry, after all. Were you really expecting her to land this?
Well, I wonder, too, is like, is camp really all that important to drag queens of today? When I think about the drag queens that, you know, are still popular today, but have had a long career, let's say like Lady Bunny, Coco Peru, Varley Jean Merman, Misunderstood, Perfidia. Those are all queens that have kind of like aspired to that kind of like 60s aesthetic. And to me, that's like, that's camp. Like, those are the campy looks.
But why is the 60s aesthetic interesting to you? Like, what are you associating? What is it about the 60s aesthetic?
Well, I think it's also, like, isn't that when Notes on Camp was actually written?
Yeah, so around the time period of Stonewall and John Waters, the rise of John Waters later on. And
yeah, late 60s, so early 70s.
This is something, so these people like Lady Bunny, Coco Peru, is like, in the 60s, they would have been... Or early 70s, they would have been small children. So these are things that they would have seen in like magazines that maybe their mother had, things that they saw in old television shows, things that they kind of inspired, like, oh, well, that's glamorous. That's what I'll do, you know?
Mm.
And so also I think that take a look at the, yeah.
So that's the idea, I think, too, behind camp is you look at something that you might idealize and then you create a look around it with what you have. But it doesn't always, you know, it doesn't have that same glamorous appeal, right?
I can agree with that to some sense, like, especially unpacking the 60s and, like, the mindset of the woman of the 60s, you know, look at how it was before. In the 50s, you know, women went back in the kitchen after the war was over, and it was very much celebrating the atomic kind of feel. In the 60s, their children were growing up and were rebelling, so everything was completely exaggerated with the hippie movement and the mod movement and all these great jarring looks, drawing flowers onto yourself. Like, it was all active rebellion against, you know, the oppressive 50s.
A lot of the things that you do in your YouTube videos is sort of turning trash into treasure, is celebrating the awkwardness of when things don't necessarily go your way, reclaiming that as something really to delight in. And I think actually that's the most important thing that drag and queer culture and camp culture can bring us, is this idea of looking at failure as something to be celebrated, not just something to learn from, but also to delight in how ridiculous it is. It's sort of like when you fall into a puddle of mud, you can either cry about your own misfortune or start enjoying the fact that you fell into the mud and how ridiculous it is to splash around in the mud. So you become part of the joke, and then you're not oppressed anymore because you're in charge of the way you look at your own misfortune.
Yeah, I could see that. And like with my whole YouTube approach, like I stand on a pedestal already because people know me, like my background as a drag queen for years, and I was on Drag Race. So like I have this level that people can go into this video and I can throw myself into absurd situations and look silly and look bad. And you know, it's essentially the same comedy of like, you know, having, you know, broccoli in your teeth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's sort of like that where you're comfortable watching this person fail because, you know, most of it is a put on and a lot of it is it's safe entertainment.
Is that what attracted you in the first place to paying tribute to Jane Mansfield?
She definitely had a sense of humor about herself. Like, she's a person that was in on her own joke.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's like also, you know, the snake eats its own head, where you create this persona you can't escape. Whereas she didn't have social media or anything like that. Had like they've had access to that, they probably would have had a lot of different careers. Like for me, you can be whatever you want now. It's awesome. Like this is a fabulous time to live.
So if you like all of a sudden tomorrow decided to change your name and your look,
you absolutely could.
I mean, would people just be like, I liked you better when you were Feast of Fools?
We still get that every now and then.
And that was just one word.
Oh my gosh.
That was one word. Shit. How many drag queens from RuPaul's Drag Race like grew up listening to our interviews with the Rue girls and then get on the show and they, you know, and approach them or one place or another and they're just like, I liked it better when you were. You know, and part of it is that there's this idea of people get really possessive over whatever it is you're doing at the time as an artist. And it, inevitably, your life will change and you'll grow. You'll move on to other topics. You're sort of pivoted to talking about wrestling. And imagine that some of your fans are like, this is too butch.
Well, yeah, I mean, remember when Edith Bunker died and all the family and everyone was like upset that she dared leave to do something else? It's sort of like that. Yeah. Like, you're known for doing one role and you're going to be that for the rest of your life unless you work and work and work to change the perception of yourself to do that. And it's, I feel like it's a lot easier nowadays in this landscape to do.
Well, you kind of have to be reinventing the wheel all the time because it's like otherwise not only does your work get stale, but then you're not all, you're not the hot new thing in town. You know, like the idea of two drag queens doing wrestling commentary videos is something really novel. Whereas, you know, a beauty blogger like James Charles is kind of like late in the game, you know,
almost late in the game, raking in the millions.
Like, and I feel like someone
like he's doing pretty good for himself. Yeah. Actually,
well, I just feel like, you know, someone like James Charles, inevitably Perez Hilton, you know, he's somebody who's being lifted and celebrated because of the fact that he's easy to manipulate and he's problematic. You know, he's harmful.
Well, is he harmful?
Well, he's harmful to the ability of queer people to be taken seriously and to be heard. And he's basically, you know, actually Azealia Banks had it right. She said that the success of these beauty bloggers and RuPaul's Drag Race is that the danger of all this is that it's turning us into consumption oriented culture and not
as
people.
She makes, you know, soaps in her own kitchen to sell online and makes music to sell to people. Again, it's like she's, I guess, also you have to consider your sources. Chris Holton was never a reliable source. He's essentially our, you know, this generation's Rex Reed. He was never a reliable journalist.
Well, that I know, but the reason they lifted him up is because of the fact that he was not reliable.
And who makes soap? Azealia Banks makes soap in her own kitchen?
Yeah, that was one of her. That's one of her new ventures. She makes soap.
I've been thinking about doing that too.
One girl,
of my friends, like, you should make soap and candles and sell that. I'm like, oh, I'll think about it. Have you been following this whole James Charles thing with Tati? So James Charles is like, he's 19 now. I think at the age of 17, like CoverGirl came in and like gave him a contract. He was a beauty blogger, you know, a little cute little teenage boy putting on makeup. So of course, all the little teen girls are gonna like fall in love with him and follow him, and they're like, hey, let's do this. And Tati Westwood, I think is their last name, is she's also a beauty blogger, and she was kind of a mentor to him in his early years. But then now he endorsed some kind of product which is a direct competition to her kind of product, and so now she's mad at him, and then she's describing his problematic behavior of she describes it, I believe, is like almost like as like predatory behavior towards straight men. Like, so James Charles isn't interested in gay men, but he's like really hot for straight guys. And I'm like, he's a 19-year-old boy, and I don't care like how femmy he is. He's still got some testosterone surging through his things. He's horny. He's attracted to men. He wants to have sex with men. And I say it's okay for him to be attracted to straight guys, but she feels as though he's this guy. He's doing some kind of behavior that to manipulate and to trick straight men into sleeping with them. And I'm like, for me, I'm just kind of like, it's demonizing his sexuality. It's demonizing gay sexuality. If it's demonizing straight guys who may want to experiment with other guys and have sex.
Well, that's the ultimate.
And part of it is just like, bitch, mind your own business.
But this is the ultimate.
It's a catch 22, yes.
What?
This is the ultimate criticism that trans people get, that they're tricking someone into having sex with them.
Yeah, being called a trap. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's the kind of thing. And so he's lost like 2 million or maybe 3 million YouTube subscribers since this. And like, I don't know, I think one of his clothing lines is down. And the other people are like kind of coming for him, and other people are saying he's canceled. Now he's still got like 15 million or 14 million followers on YouTube. So I think he's going to be okay. And this, you know, and it might just be like one of those celebrity feuds just to get people talking about them. I don't know.
We never talked about him on the show until now.
Well, we mentioned when he got his contract and stuff like that. We've talked about him generally a little bit here and there.
Yeah, I mean, Feast of Fun was actually considering changing its name to Feast of James Charles.
It is the hot button topic right now. I mean, it's a way to get views, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of people are chatting about it. But I don't really hear anybody saying anything about, like, it's okay to hit on straight guys. Sometimes they're into it, you know? And if you're a 19-year-old kid, you're probably hanging around with a bunch of other 19-year-old, 20, or 20, 21-year-old kids who may not even realize they're gay yet.
I think it's the way that he was going about it that they were upset with, the fact that it came off a bit like grooming. Mm-hmm. But also, it's like, you know who's really celebrating this moment right now are all of our ladies. We're just like, yeah, how does it feel, straight men?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, getting it all our lives.
Oh, so you're saying he was like, he was grooming him like he was like a pedophile kind of thing?
Yeah, not like a pedophile, but just like he was trying to manipulate sexuality. Like, that was the story that was being spread about. And again, like, very little proof was provided. Yeah. It's just like two people going back and forth.
Well, there's one waiter, and I think this is one of the things that he came out with a video and talked about how he had waited on James Charles, and I think it was Tati and a bunch of other people, and he ended up going up to James Charles's room because, you know, at the time he was bi-curious, he said. He was a little curious. And so they made out for like an hour, and then he's just like, in the video, he's like, we made out for an hour. I got to tell you what, he's a terrible kisser. And I'm like, you made out with him for an hour and you decide he's a terrible kisser? Like, if they're a terrible kisser, you just be like, no, this is done. And so he said that, you know, James invited him to come stay with him out wherever it is he lives. And he's just like, well, I'll have you know, like, I'll come, but it could only be his friends. Because, like, I was bi-curious, but I'm not bi-curious anymore. And I'm just kind of like, how terrible of a lady would you be that you, like, you squelched somebody's bi-curiosity? And then, and so then James just, like, stopped corresponding with him. He's just like, well, if you're not interested in, you know, basically sending him the message, if you're not interested in me sexually, I'm not paying for you to come out here and just hang out with me. You know, because it depends on where my frame of mind would be in that kind of situation. It's just like, well, maybe I did like you as a friend, or maybe we're just a lay. You know, I don't know.
My whole stance on this whole drama with the beauty gurus is, it's like, thank goodness I never followed these people to begin with, because that is a mess.
Oh, yeah.
Like, all of this is a messy, and everyone's coming out of the woodwork to get their opinions on it. It's like, thank God I just stay in my hair lane.
I don't think it's that much of a mess, though, really, because it's like basically just saying, like, you hit on straight guys, you know, and I don't like the way you hit on straight guys. And it's just like, listen, he can hit on people. Whether, you know, he doesn't, it depends on how he takes it and where he takes it. I'm not seeing any proof that he's like coercing people into having sex. But, you know, if that comes out, then, you know, of course, I think that's terrible.
I had a giggle when they outed the fact that he changed his Tinder profile to female, and like how many upstart queens suddenly felt seen because they know they did that too.
Girl, if you do that, they might block you though. I changed mine to Tinder so I could pick up some straight trade, just like James Charles. And,
they blocked you.
I got blocked a couple times. So,
but if you were James Charles, they probably would give you like
they'd give you
exclusive access. Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Well, we've gotten exclusive access to, you know, these apps because of our names too. And it's like, and part of it is, look, I want to allow young people to explore their sexuality without any repercussions. Let's create a safe space for people to explore things. And if this kid, you know, was change his mind, that's okay. You know, it's perfectly fine to change your mind at any point in the game. Yeah. If you're not cool with that, then, you know, you're part of rape culture. When you get mad because someone said no to you, step back and ask yourself, why are you getting mad? Is it, you know, people don't like in these dating apps, they don't get mad at you because you are not attractive to them. They get mad at you because they're attracted to you and you said no. You're not interested in them in the way they're interested in you. And it's not fair to demand this idea that if you're a sexually active person that you should be having sex with anybody who expresses interest in you.
Yeah, just think, all this drama happened because of hair growth pills. Just take a moment to think about that.
Was that the thing they were marketing?
That was the thing that the Tati lady, I guess, she has a brand of pills that he said he would never hawk as a rival brand, and he ended up doing it. And then there were pills? All this happened.
Oh, I'm just like, and so the perfect market for hair growth pills are teenage girls and women who put on makeup.
Well, they want lustrous and thick hair. So, yeah, of course.
Oh, I see. It's marketed towards women.
Right, yeah. And one of the things that, you know, for anybody out there who wants better hair, one of the things you should take is biotin. And I think you take it with iron or something else. And that's one of those things that they say is really good for your hair.
You go, Dr. Mercola.
Well, just Google it, you know. Because people will sell you really, really expensive kind of hair pills and whatnot. And, you know, sure, maybe they work, but also, too, like biotin mixed with a couple of other pills sometimes can have a very good effect.
Hey, you went to the RuPaul's Drag Race taping, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
You just got back from it.
I was there for literally a day.
Wow. Did you see the people who were posting photos get kicked out?
Oh my goodness, that was the biggest drama of the whole night.
Girl, spill the tea. Don't give us any spoilers, but just tell us.
I don't know much about it.
Give us the feel of the room. Like, what was going on, like, at the time?
I just thought it was hilarious, because, like, it was the first time I've been to two of these things now, and it's the first time I've ever seen, like, that has happened, where they called out an audience member for, you know, basically bootlegging their show, and it's like, good for you.
By name, did they say, you person here?
They called out their handle, so I mean, it's not like they're like saying their social security number.
So when you say that, does RuPaul come out on stage with a microphone in her hand and say, Big Dick 21?
Jumbo sign and a mega horn? Yeah, right. Like, Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, how did it go?
It was just, you know, a disembodied voice from a speaker that called out their handle and said they're going to find you. It was like, oh my goodness. Like, everyone got excited.
So it was like lots of oohs and ahs?
Exactly that. Like, it was great. Like, I feel like that was the most high tension moment of the night. It was like being in a horror film. It was fabulous.
And so were people like pointing fingers, and like people were hiding and ducking and going to the bathroom? Or
absolutely. And all of us, like all the queens, were just like, should we all just lie and say that it was us?
Well, that's the thing. Is like, I imagine some of these, you know, overambitious fans who are trying to gain notoriety with their peeps by sharing on social media are like, I wore diapers, I paid $200 for VIP tickets, you can't throw me out. And RuPaul turns to them and say, may I suggest going to the finale of Camp Wanakiki? And gives a serious look at them and says, get them out of here. Because we all kind of like want to see RuPaul sort of break that, you know, pantheist demeanor. You know what pantheism is, right?
I don't have a dictionary right in front of me, so please explain.
Pantheism is the belief that you are identical with the divine, that the divine is in everything.
Oh, so every drag queen ever. Gotcha.
Yeah, so RuPaul likes to say that the human body is a vessel for God when he's trying to explain what camp is. That the idea that we're all born naked and the rest is drag, but that ultimately that life is a joke. Love and compassion is the only two things you should take seriously, and the rest, laugh it off, shake it off. And so the idea of pantheism is that because the divine isn't in you, that you're sort of eternal, you're immortal, because you're a part of the universe. And so, you know, RuPaul has this very peace, love, harmony kind of demeanor. As queer people, we also know, because we see that in ourselves, we're also like have this anger, this frustration, the velvet rage. And so sometimes when that thing cracks and we see RuPaul's like, get the fuck out of here, you know, it's really fun to see.
I love it because it's very like, you know, a theater vibe to it, like where you're not allowed to record theater. It felt very that, like,
oh,
you know,
like Patti LuPone when she screamed at the audience member.
Yeah, she didn't clothesline somebody for having a cell phone out, but you know what, it would have been good to see.
What did you think about the crowning this year? So this is going to be the third year now that they're doing two pairs of drag queens lip syncing for their lives. Mm-hmm. And it seems like if, you know, like someone like Bianca Del Rio had to compete in this situation, she wouldn't do very well. Is this?
I mean, she'd give a lot of good expressions.
But do you think that RuPaul's Drag Race ultimately now is becoming a contest to crown people who can dance very well?
I mean, I wouldn't say that. I mean, having a dancing background is good to have in any form of entertainment, to be quite honest with you.
But if the final challenge is essentially dancing. A dancing challenge.
Not necessarily. I mean, you don't never know what the song is going to be. And some songs doing, you know, a bunch of high kicks and splits won't necessarily save you.
Oh, honey. Wait a second. You're saying that the drag queens at the finale aren't given the song ahead of time?
I don't know. I never made it to a finale, Fausto, so I can't speak intelligently on it.
They have to, of course, they're given it ahead of time. They have to prepare. They probably give them both songs and say you have to prepare these songs.
But again, it's up to you entirely what you bring to this song. Mm. And again, if you look at someone like Sasha Velour, she won her lip sync without dancing one step.
Well, she had a great gimmick, right? Mm. The flower petals coming out of her wig was, in a sense, a type of theatrical move. And
it took nerve. And to quote Paris is Burning, it do take nerve. So.
Well, she also, it was a song that was set up for Shea Coulee to do well in. Shea Coulee was the better dancer. And ultimately that flower petal,
the reveal
snatched the crown away from Shea Coulee. And even to this day, a lot of Chicago drag queens are very salty about it. They're like, Shea was robbed. I was like, yeah, she was robbed by flower petals.
But isn't that like the great New York sensibility and tradition of New York drag, where stunts are a very celebrated culture there in performances?
But Sasha Velour is also from Chicago suburbs too.
She's got her drag chops in New York.
Yeah, she's a Brooklyn queen. So,
I don't know, Brooklyn, they're very big on stunts. They love a stunt there.
how have you been rooting for? How have you been feeling about the queens this season? Any of your favorites?
Did they make it to the top five?
Are you happy about the way it's going?
I mean, I'm happy for all of them, to be quite honest with you. I've worked with almost the whole cast, so I was kind of excited just to see any of them excel. Mm. And I've met Silky. I've met, who else in the top? I've never met Evie or Brooklyn. Mm. And Akira, I've never worked with either. But
what I love about Evie is that, Evie Oddly, is that like last season on All Stars, was it Monique Hart kept trying to make Goop happen? She kept saying Goop over and over again. But now Evie Oddly is actually making Goop happen, because like her style of like dance and movement is just pure Goop. She's like Gumby, she's just like she just like what do you call it, like this, the Goop, the
claymation
stuff, the stuff play you play with as a kid,
like Gak.
It's just like she's just like Jello out there, it's great.
The Stretch Armstrong of drag, you gotta love it.
Well, I wouldn't be mad if she took the crown. I think she's an interesting person and certainly a nice, refreshing departure. Mm-hmm. Well, she also is kind of, in a sense, a bohemian artist like Sasha Velour. If Silky Ganache wins, she would be the first thick and juicy girl to snatch the crown. So that would be really fun.
And a pageant girl.
And a first pageant girl.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Brooklyn Heights also is a pageant girl. And so she would also be the first.
And the first pageant. Canadian. The first non-American citizen.
Ooh.
And then, of course.
And then the other one, we're not even remembering her name.
That's not
Akira.
True.
Akira
is a fantastic performance. She gives a great talking head.
I heard that they.
And then, of course, Miss Vanjie, because, there's still five people there. So we don't know who is.
She could be the first returning queen to snatch the crown, yes.
She could be the first returning queen.
But I heard when they were interviewing the queens at the finale that they weren't even bothering to, interview some of them. They were just like, tell us about your. Okay, thanks. They're just, walking away from. They're barely not even letting her answer the question.
Did she walk the red carpet?
I don't know. I wasn't there for the red carpet. Oh. I got there right when the show started.
Wait, you were late to your own premiere?
I just had to be an audience member, okay?
Girl. They're not letting the former Rue Girls walk the red carpet?
Oh, we were allowed to walk it. I got there late, so I missed the red carpet.
Too busy ratting up that hair, huh?
Girl, I was flying off a damn red eye and getting ready. Girl, we had stuff to do.
Mm. Oh, shit.
So you were in full drag, though?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I regret every bit of it. I'll never wear heels again. I'll never wear a corset. I'm wearing a caftan and flats that next reunion.
Oh, that's, take your lead from somebody like Lady Bunny who does that, or from RuPaul who doesn't even dress in drag.
I think RuPaul wears a sweatpants underneath it.
You gotta look good from the chest up.
We, for years when we did our drag videos on YouTube, we never wore anything except the top. No one time Pandora Box, when we filmed that video with Pandora Box,
I'm wearing jeans.
Yeah, we're all wearing jeans underneath it. And she's like, come see me at the clubs. Come into the club afterwards. And so we went to Spin. Mm-hmm. It was a club at the time that Pandora Box was playing at. And all these people were like, get the fuck out of here.
They thought we were cross-dressers.
They thought we were trying to muscle in on their territory.
And I got my ass grabbed out on the street, and I was just like, oh, this is what women go through all the time, and that sucks.
It wasn't all bad, was it?
Well, drag is not consent. Hashtag.
Are you a watcher of the Game of Thrones?
Oh my God, yes I am.
What did you make of episode 5, the penultimate episode of Game of Thrones?
The only thing I was upset about was the anticlimactic death of the evil queen.
Oh, of Cersei. So Cersei got, spoiler alert, got crushed with her lover brother in the basement. And I was just kind of, I think a lot of people share your sentiment, because I think most of us wanted to see somebody really just take a knife and make her suffer before she died, like Arya, who wanted revenge, and she was the top person on her list. And then Arya was just like, yeah, the city's crumbling, I guess I'm not going to go after her. And then she ends up like getting squashed with her brother, and it was just like, man, you wanted to see this evil queen really, you know, twist in the wind.
I mean, it speaks historically to like the reference points of it all, because I guess like her death is, I guess, appropriate considering she was killed fleeing a coward's death. So that's okay, but I also would have liked to have a more of a payoff. And I also saw every fanboy and nerd is upset about the whole Daenerys situation.
Are we at all surprised that Daenerys unleashed her dragon on King's Landing and just is trying to burn it to the ground?
I saw a great tweet where somebody said, like, apparently none of y'all have come from a culture with colonialism, European continents saying they're going to bring peace and not following through with it. And it shows.
Yeah. And I think that was definitely the intent of the writers of this, is to show that, like, yeah, we showed you from the very beginning that this person is a little batshit crazy. And now you're seeing it. They promise that they're going to save you. They promise they're going to change things. That under them, it's going to be a benevolent rule. But again, it's just it's going to be the Iron Fist or the Iron Fist.
You have to consider the source, too. It's like, mm-hmm. how many civilizations had she ruined getting to the top and neglected? Yeah. So, I mean, you guys are surprised that she suddenly turned heel and burned a city down.
Yeah.
Well, there's one more episode of Game of Thrones before we have to, we can finally rest at peace.
Fausto was never more silent than that portion of the podcast.
I'm like, God damn.
Well, he watched some of it last season, and was kind of into it, but this season he's not been able to. You know, and part of it is that Sundays is kind of like the beginning of our work week a lot of times, too. So it's like we're recording podcasts, we're doing things that day, so it's kind of hard to catch sometimes.
Well, I feel like if they just gave the dragons their own show, you know, it would be a lot more fun.
So
you just want Dragonheart. That's okay. What you want.
Yeah, well, I just want the dragons without any humans. Like, I think that would be kind of interesting, because they kind of remind me of my dog.
Oh, it definitely remind me of Jesse. So who do you think is going to end up on the Iron Throne at the end? And is the Iron Throne even still around? Is that what's up in the Red Keep? Is that where they keep the Iron Throne?
Yes, and King's Landing. King's Landing is where it is.
Okay.
So,
but King's Landing is where the Iron Throne is. Wasn't that King's Landing that got burned?
Yeah, so she burned down her own throne.
Okay. Because
but remember, she said fire and, you know, steel, she'll break the wheel.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so nobody's going to end up on that throne now.
What I think, this is my theory, so call me crazy, but I think the person to kill her will be Arya.
Oh,
yeah.
Because the prophecy said she'll close brown eyes when she killed, you know, what's his face? Crazy, you know, 16 daughter guy. Then she killed the Night King, and the green eyes will be Daenerys.
Oh, because she has green eyes?
I never noticed until they showed close-ups of her. It's like, her eyes are fucking green. I never even noticed that.
Oh.
That was the setup where you're watching her see all the destruction happening.
But is she like, still alive? Because she went off on a white horse, and the white horse can sometimes be the symbol of death.
I think she's alive.
Yeah, I think she's alive.
Ooh. If anything, that heat just gave that horse a great blowout.
how's the wig world these days? What are you doing with wigs?
The wig world is tremendous. As you guys know, I do my wig business where I sell styled wigs. That is fabulously. And I have more videos planned for my YouTube channel. So keep an eye out for that.
Have you guys heard about Madame Yang? She's a member of Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort, and she's the Chinese madam who runs the massage parlor. She's now and currently being investigated by the FBI for illegally funneling funds from her massage parlor into Trump's campaign.
You know, I can honestly say I have not heard of her.
Madame Yang, I can't believe, God, it's like, and in Alabama, there's, they just basically, they're making abortion illegal.
Oh my God, yes.
To attempt to get it all the way to the Supreme Court. So protesters are dressing up as The Handmaid's Tale and standing outside the Alabama courthouse in protest. It's terrifying. You know, it's like it really I really hope that we can in this next election overcome a lot of the election fraud that we've been seeing. And they're saying that in 2016, I guess there were about 8 million voters purged from the state of Georgia. And purged from being able to vote. Basically, they were registered to vote. They were purged from the, so when they went to vote, they couldn't vote. So the votes weren't counted. And that the, the Democratic governor candidate lost by only 1.5 million votes. So had they not purged those votes, and they did that illegally, she would have won. So this is the kind of stuff we're going to be facing in the 2020 election. I just want to hear every single drag queen talk more about, you know, it's like, don't let Lady Bunny be the only one who's, you know, holding up the political arm of drag.
Or spewing the wonders of Jennifer Hudson.
You know, Lady Bunny's going to be doing the audiobook for the book Drag.
Is she?
Yeah. So Frank DeCaro, he was a guest on yesterday's show. He's doing he put this kind of encyclopedia book about drag, but I'm like, funny, Frank, you forgot to mention me or Mark or James Mansfield in the book. But, you know, and it's mostly a collection of interviews with drag queens from New York and Los Angeles, and some, you know, notable queens from other cities. But it's kind of a lot like your videos. It sort of looks at the historical and cultural impact of drag from the last 100 years.
Right. It's, again, it's subjective too. So it's his, you know, his scope of, you know, history of drag. So that's fine.
It's basically who Sirius Satellite Radio brought into the studio, right? So he could form a relationship with them and get them for the book. And in the process, Lady Bunny is doing all the voices for all the drag queens in the book. So she's going to be impersonating like every, you know, Peaches Christ and Coco Peru. And I think it's going to be hysterically funny to listen to.
I can't get over the fact that Bunny can read. I thought she was illiterate.
I started
believe
that
it or not.
So that whole thing started early on in the podcast as a kind of a joke, because Lady Bunny had this people who longtime listeners remember ladybunny.net before she was this sort of the George Takei and drag of Facebook, where anything that Lady Bunny shares on her social media has a lot of traffic, a lot of response. Lady Bunny had this really, really funny, wonderful blog on her website. And my friends and I were like, there's no way this messy, crazy drag queen is writing all that stuff. So for a while, we were just like, we were sort of having this very Fox News oriented story, like,
yeah,
prove Lady Bunny can read and write, make a video writing on a chalkboard, you know? And that got her attention. And then one day at work, I get a phone call. And I pick it up and I hear, this is the first time I got a call from Lady Bunny. And she goes, so I'm illiterate, am I? I was just
she used
like,
to call the home line and I'd be like, Fausto, it's somebody pretending to be Lady Bunny. And he'd be like, it really is Lady Bunny. I was like, oh.
And she thought our whole Fox News thing of like, prove Lady Bunny can read, was so funny that she, you know, we became friends and that's how she came on as a guest on the show.
Well, and the story behind the video too is like we had like we were like, let's see if we can have her sign her own autograph.
And oh, then, well, that's later. So we went to the last official night of Tranny Shack. Or Tea Shack. and Lady Bunny was there backstage. And so we tricked her into signing her autograph. And then we, you know, got somebody, hand double to
Curtis
Jensen to write her name on a sheet of paper and make it look like she was, you know,
couldn't barely write her own name.
Yeah. Like she had a stroke or something.
I remember that. You're like, you saw the hairy knuckles and it's like, it seems legit. Mm.
She was really mad that night. For real.
I bet.
She was mad because they had booked her for this gig and they had all these other A-list celeb, you know, the queer celebrities. They had Animatronic, they had Justin Bond, Lady Miss Keir was there.
But she would not sing Groovies in the Heart.
There was all like kind of restrictions that all these entertainers were putting on Peaches and Heclina. And Lady Bunny was furious because she had asked for drinks in her dressing room and no one brought her any drinks. So I was like, Curtis, go grab some drinks.
A double.
Make it a double. So he got her two double vodkas and gave it to her. And that's why she was like cooperating with us.
That's what she was having. She doesn't drink anymore.
Yeah. But at the time she was like, I just want to say, I am so grateful that the Feast of Fools got me some alcohol.
Took like money from their minuscule budget.
I have to say a call from Lady Bunny, an unsolicited phone call from Lady Bunny is one of the few joys of being in the entertainment field. I got one in P-Town from her at like the dead of night, like 3 a.m. She just called and said, hey girl, I just want to tell you that your post-op, click. Like, what the fuck? I called her back. I was
your
like,
post-op
are you drunk?
Did what?
She's like, your post-op, click. Oh. Just hung up on me.
That's, wow. That's a compliment.
I was like, thanks, girl. I called her back. Like, are you drunk, buddy? She's like, no.
Well, you've built puppets now for two drag queens. You built a puppet of Michelle Visage for Trixie Mattel. Mm-hmm. And you built a mini Lady Bunny for Lady Bunny.
Yes, and I may have done another puppet for her down the line that she has not debuted yet.
What? I haven't seen the, what Lady Bunny puppet? I don't know.
I filmed it at her show that she did recently in Chicago. Yeah,
get this. She does not know how to work that.
I got to tell you, she does not know how to work that puppet. It looks like Sid and Marty Cross, HR Puffin stuff, puff too much stuff, and that puppet looks like it had a stroke. Just saying.
Well, that was what she asked for. But no, I made her a puppet. As a gift, I gifted it to her. She came to Milwaukee, and she comes and calls me 3 months later to tell me that she left it in the hotel room and needs another one.
No!
Charging for that. Are you charging her for that one?
It's been gone. It's done in the past, but yeah. I was just laughing like she left it in like Tel Aviv or some shit.
That'll be $5,000.
Doulas.
She's like, can I pay you in blowjobs and pills of E?
Can I regale you with stories about Coco Peru?
You're pretty good at doing. We should just every time we interview a drag queen, ask her to imitate Lady Bunny. We did that. You know, we actually did that in season 7 of the red carpet of RuPaul's Drag Race. We actually did ask Katya and Trixie Mattel and all the Jaden Dior Fierce and all of them to imitate Lady Bunny. And then Lady Bunny shows up and is like, did someone say my name?
It's very freeing. Like, you can get away with, I have to say, like, doing the Lady Bunny voice, I learned this from you guys, is a great way of insulting anyone and, like, not having to get mad at you.
Oh, yeah. They take it like a bitch. As long as you
I did it. I did it to Charlie Hides after she got eliminated. She was like, hey, Charlie, I know you used to be Candy Cane Baxter. You know, it's not too late to change back.
Oh, how's your relationship with all the queens from your season?
Oh, I talked to none of them.
Really?
They're all dead to me. No, I'm kidding. Oh. I see them here and there, but again, it's like I'm so busy with the YouTube thing, and they're all busy doing their own shit. Not like something I really worry about. We see each other. We all fall back into like sisterhood talk, you know? That's not how it is. Like family, you don't see it all very often.
Well, you're kind of like us now. You're at home all the time, and you're making videos, and Ernesto massages your feet.
I wish. No, it's a full-time job now and I love it.
That's wonderful. You're a beauty blogger now.
I wish. I mean, I'm not quite
James,
you know,
Manfield making... was trying to steal my man.
I'm no Jaclyn Hill, but I'm working towards getting there.
You're a beauty predator.
Oh God. Let's not get that out in the stratosphere.
Not a sexual predator, a beauty predator. You go up to people and be like, girl, look at the mess you look.
You need paint.
I got this puppet, and this puppet looks better than you do.
Why haven't I used puppets in my videos yet? That's a good point. I should do that.
The thing about like puppets, you got to get good puppeteers to do it. Otherwise, it just seems like someone's just holding up a doll.
Yeah, I'd have to do it all myself, too. I feel that's probably why it hasn't happened, because I'm the only good puppeteer I know.
I'm a good puppeteer. I'll do it with you.
Aw, I've been waiting my whole life to hear that, Fausto.
I'll stick my hand up your ass.
Ew. This went to a dark place.
Just prelude, girl, because I don't like to cut my nails.
This went to a really dark place. Don't want...
No, I did. Did you ever see my work with Little Toast from the second Cooking with Drag Queens crowdfunding campaign?
Yes, I did see that.
And it was like, that was me, baby. I was out squatting down. Not the first time I've been squatting in front of my husband's crotch, but.
It probably won't be the last either.
And that's right, honey. Mm-hmm. Yes. I know, that's right.
What are your summer plans?
Summer plans. I'm hoping to get this damn woman show finished so I can start doing that by, fall of this year.
Okay.
And one woman, two breastplates.
Yes. Four. We're down to four right now.
Yeah, you upgraded your boobs from the boobs for queens to something else from eBay or something.
Oh my God. So like $100 pair from AliExpress, and I've never looked back. I felt like such a fool.
Oh, girl, you got to get me some of those. I need nice tits.
Get you some jugs, girl. That'll get the views on that cooking show of yours.
It's like, on this episode of Cooking with Drag Queens, we got fresh milk.
We're working with dairy.
Suck on these little titties, honey. Mm.
They got lots of milk.
And see, you already have Mark, and he's got nice, great, packy titties already, too, so it's already a nice combo pair.
But that's not where the milk comes out. You have to find your protein from a different source. I was reading about Wisconsin, your home state, and why it's such a nexus for beer, and why people love beer so much in Wisconsin. It's because it's a combination, because they have close to fresh water. Mm-hmm. The immigrant population really loved it. And also, too, you can grow the hops and the grains there, too. And so it became a nexus. Plus, also ice. I guess you need ice for the beer making process at some point in time. And there's lots of ice in Wisconsin. And, Chicago used to make a lot of beer, too. But then they had the Chicago fire. And so then Wisconsin just picked up the slack and just has been producing beer like crazy ever since.
That was a long walk to say we're just alcoholics.
Yeah, well, it's that's part of it.
Well, like when you tour and do shows, like I imagine that a lot of people are like, oh, let's get James Mansfield drunk.
Oh, I mean, they used to. I mean, I was sober for a long period of time, and I'm not anymore.
No?
No, I recently picked up drinking again, and I realized it wasn't my fault. It was Fireballs.
Oh.
She'll get you every time. No, I felt really good about it because I was sober for 6 months, and at a brunch randomly, I stood up and rang the glass and told everyone, you guys, I've been sober for 6 months now. I'm really proud of myself, and I've got to know you guys on a deeper level personally and see who you all really are as people. And I decided I'm going to start drinking again.
Well, it's fine. Part of me is like I don't drink very often, but when I do, I like to drink when I'm in drag. It's fun. But if you're on stage and you're having to move and dance and stuff, it's like having a shot of vodka before you go to the gym. It's not, to me, it's like, I'm like, I get winded, I feel tired and heavy, whereas like...
Some people call it go-go juice, though.
Yeah, they do. It's just, think about, look at how your body reacts to it and whether this helps your performance or your life or not. Like, it's a sometimes food, as Cookie Monster says about cookies.
Well, I just look at it as, I'm just, practicing my own business. I'm selling alcohol. I have to test the product.
Oh, there's this conspiracy theory going around.
Oh, I do love spill more. I love conspiracies.
Well, so Sesame Street is celebrating its 50-year anniversary. And for years, for, you know, for, I don't know, how long has the Muppets been posting videos on YouTube? This past year, they haven't done shit. Like, everything with the Muppets has disappeared.
Well, they're owned by Disney now.
Yeah, and Disney's, like, been developing something in the works. They're not releasing it, but all the they're sequestering all the puppeteers. They're stopping all videos. There's like a silence. Even the Muppets Twitter account hasn't posted anything like in quite some time.
I imagine just the Muppets, though, because Sesame Street's its own conglomerate.
No, yeah, that's a different thing. But the Muppets itself, and so a lot of the people who work on the, you know, Muppets on Sesame Street, the characters on Sesame Street also work on the Muppets, and they've been just super, super busy. And so there's something really big being announced. And then there was the actress who played in Les Mis and Devil Wears Prada. I'm blanking. Anne Hathaway is being cast as a human Muppet in an upcoming Muppet film.
Ooh.
Well, all right.
James Mansfield, like, what about me?
I could have been a human Muppet.
You already are.
How's your hubby, Ernesto?
How's Ernesto?
Yeah, can I call him hubby, or is that too
private?
Too much pressure on him?
Oh, he can be the hubby. No, he's great. He started up his own YouTube channel, and we have a new show we're debuting called I Tap That, where we review men from Instagram.
Oh, that's good.
Wow. So yeah, he's doing great. He's embarking his life as a YouTuber now. I can't wait to see how it goes.
Yeah, put that bitch to work.
You start feeling how it feels.
That's wonderful. I'm glad that you guys are like making work together, and I think that's very, very healthy for a relationship. And
well, we're a theatrical family, as you guys are too.
Yeah. And I think that's really a great thing to do. So
it's only a matter of time before we get this damn dog tap dancing. Lazy thing.
We try to train our dog to get dollar bills. So like if I do a drag show, Jesse would go into the audience and grab dollar bills from the audience, but he will not put a dollar bill in his mouth because he thinks they're dirty.
We can't get him to do it yet, but you know, maybe I should start trying again. I don't know. I need a better dog at a younger age.
There ain't enough pepperoni sticks in the world to make that one happen, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I guess because, you know, the dogs put their mouths on the money, and I guess money has, it's kind of like Alaska. Everybody's had their hands on it, and there's trace amounts of cocaine on its surface.
Well, I mean, Sarah Palin hasn't been there for a long time.
Well, James Mansfield, it is delightful to talk
to
you.
Thanks.
It's great.
Thank you guys for having me.
To talk to you. Remember, the human body is a vessel for God.
Okay.
So worship it, girl.
Yeah, get on your knees and pay tribute. Take your communion and swallow.
Oh, gosh, there's so many puns. So many puns. I wasn't ready.
Awful taste, great execution. So just camp in a nutshell. Awful taste, great execution. So serious, it becomes hilarious. Delighting in the ridiculous for ridiculous reasons.
And if you don't know the definition and you think you may be wrong, you're probably right.
Yeah, because a drag is built on failure.
Yes.
James Mansfield, thank you so much for transforming trash into treasure every single day when you look in a mirror.
Oh.
I'm sorry. Oh. I couldn't resist.
That's fine. I'll let you have it. You have so few nowadays.
When you start talking like Lady Bunny and start insulting people, it's kind of like eating potato chips.
It stuns you. Like it's, it literally is, like Mark said, it will like make you your bitch. Like I'm stunned right now.
Oh, take care, sweetie. Listen, I really will come up to Milwaukee and work one of your puppets.
All right. Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, let's hang out this summer sometime and do something.
Let's have some fun.
I got to get out of the city. Yeah. Go to another city.
I'll trade with you. You turn my $3 mop into a wig, and I will shove my hands up all your puppets' butts.
They'd appreciate it because they get so little from me.
And they'd be like, girl. I could even imitate James Mansfield. You can have a conversation with James Mansfield.
I'd love to hear that.
I'd be like, hey, it's James Mansfield. It's kind of James Mansfield. It's a bit of like Lady Bunny, but squeakier. Right?
Oh, a little bit. I mean, it's waxing Jane Mansfield meets Bunny meets like, you know, a helium binge.
Yeah. Well, the nice thing, if you write a script out, like I can just, you know, and you say it to me, I can just imitate it and then just throw it back at you there.
Well, I'd love to hear how you do it.
I'd love to hear how you do it.
That's pretty good.
Oh, dear,
good.
Do I have a cold?
Oh, James, I adore you, sweetie.
I adore you both, too. Thanks again for having me.
Anytime.
All right, love you, boys. Get off my phone. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
James Mansfield lives in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Check her out on YouTube, James Mansfield, ooh, with a Y.
I adore James. We got to know James because we asked for volunteers for Cooking with Drag Queens, and she volunteered to come down with her boyfriend, Ernesto, Ernie, and help out on a session. And she did help, you know, production work and help clean the kitchen, help stylize the food and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, we discovered she was a drag queen, created a relationship. And then when she got on Drag Race, we're like, well, now's your time to come on Cooking with Drag Queens, girl.
That's right, girl.
And we made a Beauty and the Beast cake. She was the beast.
You beat me to it.
And then we made a cake. A beast of beauty.
It's one of the more favorite cakes and recipes, actually. The dulce de leche, the caramel, Mexican caramel frosting. Mm. It's one of the most delicious because it's a Swiss buttercream that we made. And we turned that into a Barbie doll cake, but with Belle from Beauty and the Beast. And it's really, if you guys haven't seen it, you definitely treat yourself and check it out. It's free. You can binge them. I support it. Mm-hmm. Thank you guys so much for listening to Cookie, I mean, Feast of Fun.
I want to remind folks that we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus. We also have a Patreon, patreon.com/feastoffun, where you can get behind the scenes goodies and blog entries.
You can even get the recipes for Cooking with Drag Queens. Mm-hmm. They get posted about once every other week. Ooh, for just pennies a serving. Oh.
I'm taking a little break this week, going to Seattle. I'm going to be marching in the 7 de Mai parade, which is the Norwegian Constitution parade. And I'm also getting to see Julie, who you guys heard on this podcast, who is my castmate. I originally intended to go out there and just visit her and hang out with some of my other castmates. And then Alt for Norga is actually going to film out there. They decided they'd film out there. So it's a happy coincidence for their 10-year anniversary special. So maybe I'll be on the special. Maybe you'll just see me marching. Maybe they'll interview me. I don't know. But I'm excited to go out there. And I'm also going to meet up with some of the listeners of the podcast. And that's fun. And maybe I'll get to catch a drag show or two. If you guys are in the Seattle area, hit me up on Facebook.
Mark Felian with a C. Mm-hmm. Why don't you just show up in drag and say, I've transitioned. I'm post-op.
You know, I thought about doing it, but then I was just like, oh, it's a lot of work.
They're not paying you, RuPaul.
They're not paying me, RuPaul. So I'll be wearing a suit in the parade because, you know,
a suit?
Norwegians take their parade very seriously.
Oh, you can be all well-dressed. I hope it's good weather for a suit.
I hope so, too. Well, I did get my trench coat. I made it waterproof. I got the waterproof spray.
You're wearing a trench coat in a parade? What kind of parade is this?
It rains.
But you're not going to wear anything underneath it?
Well, of course I'm wearing. I said I'm wearing a suit.
You're going to flash them and be like, look at
this
nut.
That'd be funny.
Check these nuts.
I'm sure they would love that.
They'd be like, get these nuts out of my face.
But we'll be back next week, guys.
Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.